Hi, this is John Mayer.
I'm Scotty Crowe.
Here with Scotty Crowe, whose job title changes from time to time.
Utility guy.
I figured that no music artist has ever done a commentary for their own live show. I don't know if that's clever or stupid, as Derek Smalls from Spinal Tap would say. And when they asked us about doing a DVD, which was really late on in the tour, I was originally kind of apprehensive about it because it was so late in the tour that you get into the last, I think this was the third to the last show, you start to think about going home and about how you're going to ship your stuff off the bus. But looking back on it now, I think that there was a lot more stuff that was more fully realized towards the end of the tour. And it's a better trade-off to do it that way than to start it at the beginning of the tour. When I've heard some live records, some people's live tapes from those shows at the beginning of the tour, and they were horrible.
Yeah, and I definitely agree, because I think that, when we're out there for 2.5 months playing every night, everybody kind of gets into a groove. It's just, we jumped up the size in venues, too.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely, like, this intro for 3x5, I'm not giving anything away. You can tell, it's 3x5. It probably says that on the box.
I mean, capo,
When you see the capo, well, for all the gearheads, when they see the capo on the 8th fret. But this intro actually started out in Vancouver for rehearsals for the tour. And it happened really, really quickly, which was cool. I just started playing this thing, and Steven Chopek, the drummer, just kind of did this drum thing, and David went along with it. It's really, really, really intense. And this is one of those songs. 3x5 is one of those songs. If I don't write more songs soon, I'm just gonna keep writing new verses for this song. When I look down on the set list every night, I see 3x5 down there, and wherever it is on the set, I go, okay, cool. It's my favorite, certainly. Part of the thing that kind of freaks me out about watching this DVD back is that I've got to actually watch myself sing, which is just, I'd rather hear myself sing than watch myself sing. I'm going to try to keep my self-effacing comments to myself, because to watch myself just bounce around like a weirdo.
I can talk a little bit about the fact that, about the gear arrival of the day. I would say that this show was a pretty big show of the tour. We had the DVD shoot. We were playing one of the larger venues on tour. And one of the truck drivers actually didn't show up for the gear until sound check time. So all the setup that the crew was supposed to do couldn't happen on time. So
it's actually it's actually fake. There's a sound check kind of a chronology of sound check as an added bonus, because everyone's trying to add bonuses in. We've got to add bonuses now.
We do. We have to have extras.
Because about the DVD copying. So we actually fudged it and put it in there and said it was 8 o'clock in the morning, but I think it was more like 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah, but everybody had really bust their tail to pull the show off, and I think it would be great.
Well, for me, this was the first DVD show that I think, because we actually tried to tape, I think, two other shows for possible DVD consideration, and I think I'm a lot more defiant in this show. I just, you see that camera over there? I just didn't care about that camera so much that I think I swore at it a lot in my head. Because the thing about doing the DVD is that you get all these people who don't normally work with you, and they show up and they want to pull you aside and say, hey, I'm the lighting guy. If you can just kind of, by the way, watching my feet do that, I don't know how my feet do that. I'm just going to ignore that. The lighting guy says, oh, by the way, if you can just kind of stand in between this point in front of the drums and this point in front of the monitor, and you go, okay, sure. And then before you go on stage, now you've got six or seven different people's,
say choreography.
Yeah, the whole thing comes off so stiff. So I said to myself, Ken Healy, the tour manager, calls this the hee-haw dance. That's the hee-haw dance. I promise you, I don't know that I'm doing it. And you're gonna see a bevy of weird guitar faces that I can won't further explain to you, but I can promise you they're not real, because they're not fake, because if they were fake, I would have picked much different ones to do. But Ken Healy calls that the hee-haw dance. know, the reason it's called Any Given Thursday is because, you know, like I was saying, the Stevie Ray Vaughan live at the Elmer Combo CD, I remember just thinking it was the most amazing thing in the world, and then reading at some point that Jimmy Vaughan, his Stevie Ray Vaughan's brother, had said that's actually kind of a normal show. There's nothing really out of control about that show. That was just a normal night for him. And so I kind of like the idea, certainly knowing that I wasn't going to ascend to that same level of greatness on a normal night, but just not try and crystallize everything that we do into one show and just take a show. And so the thing about this show is that there are parts of it that I wish I could do again, and there are parts of it that I don't, but that's what happens in any show, you know. I mean, John Alasia, who did the mixing for this show, asked me a couple times, kind of in a kind of guilty pleasure kind of tone, like, you know, do you want to come back in the studio and redo some vocals? And I can't do it. You know, this show has bumps and bruises all over it, but the parts, the high moments are much more believable when you know that it wasn't really messed with. And also, I think my voice is really, like, I can't believe my voice is this breathy, because I just think I must have been a little nervous. Whenever I'm nervous, more breath kind of creeps into my voice. But I think when I got this mix, I asked everybody, is my voice really this breathy? I also think sometimes I sound like I'm German or something. My S sounds turn into SH because I don't know when to swallow correctly on stage. So I end up spitting in the front row all the time.
And you used to do that tongue thing a lot too, the Jordan tongue.
There was a period of time when I would lick the microphone on certain words. I should remind everyone that Scotty has been on the road with me as long as I've been on the road, pretty much, so...
Thank you very much, and welcome.
And there's the welcome to Birmingham.
Well, I like the kind of fact that it's like I like the fact that I show up in the city and say welcome. But I kind of like the way it kind of goes up against thank you.
Right.
You guys ready to go for a while tonight?
That's what I say when I can't wait to get off stage.
I know. It's definitely
not
true.
That's not true. That's me. That's me coming to terms with the fact that I can't move for 2 hours.
Coordinated, ladies.
And this tour, this whole tour, I played No Such Thing, I think, in the first 3 songs, because I was so scared of being a one-hit wonder. And I actually asked people the other day, am I still a one-hit wonder? I guess technically I'm not, because Your Body is the Wonderland, as we do this commentary, is still hanging tough, like Donnie and the boys.
I think you ruined the timelessness of this DVD.
No, it's okay. But I just remember not wanting to be the artist that played his single at the end, and kind of, again, like defiantly playing my song first or second and saying, if that's what you came here for, have a good night and let everyone else fan out their arms and have a good time, you know? By the way, Big Watch, IWC Big Pilot, you can tell what time it is. You know, I did that for my fans. You want to watch the DVD back, you know what time it is at any point in the set. And it proves the continuity of the set. We didn't take anything out. But I love playing the song in front of people. I've never tired of it in front of people.
And this song lived for a long, long time, too.
A year. I almost feel sorry. Like, that's another reason I played it first so many times in the set, is because, like, I don't know what's in these people's heads who come to the show sometimes, and so I always wonder, like, do they want to hear it? I mean, every time I started lacing into the intro, I realized that I was wrong, but I always wonder, like, do we just want to get this out of the way, or do people want to savor it? This song never really... Turned into any kind of extended jam. There's David's refrigerator right there. David always likes to travel with a refrigerator. I don't have a chin, and I didn't know that I didn't have a chin until I watched this DVD back. Just so you know, I'm not bringing it up, but I'm cringing every time I see myself from the side. I just think my side view is just so strange. I do have to say that, credit where credit is due to the whatever powers are responsible for giving you acne. I think up until this show, I always had some kind of flourishing acne on my face.
Florid fine.
Like the day of the shooting. So this is kind of cool, enjoying my... Look at David. Again, I think everybody on stage, their commitment is to playing music. And we don't... Look at me. Like, nobody cares what we look like on stage. Everything is to facilitate playing music. Look at David. That's great. You know what? David doesn't care, and that's what everyone loves about him. By the way, if you're listening to this commentary, you're probably homesick and you're in bed and you can't get across the room and you've watched the show 100 times on your DVD player or your laptop, and now you decided to kind of extinguish every single option on the CD, DVD. You've listened to it in 5.1 even though you don't have the speakers.
Right.
And now you're listening to the comments, or you're on an airplane and you flying to Senegal and you had to check your CDs and DVDs because you can throw them pretty hard at people. So
and this one was stuck
was still in the player. So and I don't know why anybody would be listening to this.
Going for your friend and mine, David Library. We know him as Daylight.
People love Daylight. You can't deny a guy who's, you know, he's just a cool guy.
He's cool. And I hear he won an award for his bass playing.
Did he really?
I think so.
That's right. Bass Player Magazine?
Yeah, I believe so.
Said he was the most, what was it?
The best unobtrusive.
The best, yeah.
I think so.
Well, I don't really know what that means, and if I was David, I'd be kind of confused.
But basically, he's great.
Yeah, I'm the master of hyping people up, as you can see.
How to rock a party with Jeff Lewis.
There's a song about not giving up. About eighth chances and ninth chances. And
this is a little bit of a commentary from both sides.
Yeah, I'm talking about me talking. By the way, we're filming this commentary for a DVD that will be out soon. And then we're going to put commentary on top of that commentary. I'm going to say, look at my hair as I'm sitting in the chair looking at the computer. I didn't really appreciate this song until I started playing it live. I don't know why. On Room for Squares, there are some songs. I think anytime you're just dealing with 13, 14 songs, I don't know if you can nail every one of them the way that you really want to. And I don't think I ever really got the grit that I wanted to get on this song. But when it's live, there's a certain certain kind of ballsiness that it has. And it just kind of got funkier. And I remember people saying, like, well, it's a sad song. Why are you so happy on stage with it? And it's like, it's not really a sad song. It's kind of aggressive. You know, it's kind of like, me so cool, me want you back. You know, it's like, it's not supposed to be sad. But I really enjoy the song now.
But for a long time, you didn't even want to put it on Room for Squares. Is that right?
I didn't want to... I don't remember. I remember I didn't want to re-record it because I felt really done with it. But it's a different song on stage. It's not as passive. It's kind of aggressively self-righteous and kind of saying, you know, yeah, baby, you got to get your bag.
This is a song too that it really sounds drastically different when you and David were on tour playing an acoustic.
We used to do acoustic. Yeah, every one of these songs is like, I almost feel sometimes like I want to play at least one song from Room for Squares every night acoustic and have it rotate. But it's just weird. You have so many people in the crowd who are divided up into groups of people who knew us as an acoustic act and people who knew us as, you know, people who saw me solo opening for Glenn Phillips or you know, all six of those people who came early enough to see me.
Slide in, you could not show.
crazy chin. It's a little butt chin. My dad has it. I'm starting to look more like my dad.
I love him. You know, you're still supposed to go bowling sometime soon.
By the way, you know, I don't know why I didn't mention this earlier, but Scotty does all the road journals on the website, www.johnmayer.com. And my dad reads them, and if anybody is more out of touch with Scotty's pop culture references, it's my dad. But I guess my older brother Carl decodes them for him, which must involve levels and levels of explanation. But my father came to really be a fan of Scotty's now.
And be a fan of him.
And Scotty's a fan of my dad. And so I think they correspond without my knowing, which fairly creepy. I think my parents sent you money.
They did.
If your parents send your friend money, they got a relationship.
I sent them a thank you card. It was good. Back to me. Doesn't it piss you off? Your will is not
strong. I also like this DVD because it doesn't pretend that there aren't cameras. There, you know, cameras are getting
everywhere.
Shots of cameras
everywhere.
Big shit, like you said the other day. Big shout outs to crew guys, just crew guys filming each other. I love this part of the song too. Like,
it's true. And
it's not really overdriven. It's not like a, it's not a screaming guitar solo. It's kind of heavy in terms of, like, the motion of it, but it's not really, really distorted. And, like, none of my guitar tones are really distorted, which I like. Like, I think to step on a, you know, it's edgy, but it's not overblown. I think to step on a pedal and rely on that to kind of say to everybody, hey, everybody, we're getting heavy. I mean, Chopec's drumming gets so heavy on this part.
This is the rock and roll part of the show.
Yeah. I always feel a little silly when I do it. I wonder if people are, I don't know. I just hope, I know that I'm coming correct, and I just hope that people don't ever, that was just my Hendrix kind of, the Hendrix quote. But I always wonder if people go like, all right, I believe you up till there. I'm thinking that at least four times a night. Am I believable? You know? I think I'm going to go for a shoe tying, which doesn't really happen on stage. Not conducive to the coolness of being the guy playing music, but conducive to things like balance, you know, dignity. Shoe tying on stage, that really is kind of the first time that ever happened, and you see me doing it even slower than normal, because again, screw the cameras.
Again. Tie one shoe. Those shoes are old shoes, too.
I you know what? I ditched them. Those are Nike Air Terra Humara, circa 1997. And they're good. I had to throw them away. I honestly ran them bald.
It's true.
They were those. By the way, you can't smell anything on stage when you watch this. They haven't figured out how to do that. But if you could, I mean, this is, and everybody's wearing end of the tour clothes. Mm-hmm. And,
everything's dirty.
Yeah, that shirt is actually, I'm just kind of like filling that shirt out, but it's retaining its own shape. And they had to steam it. And my mom told me that if you iron a dirty shirt, you kind of like heat lock the stink inside. So I was kind of worried that that was going to happen, but it didn't happen.
You know, like that, it's like that first week in a relationship, the free movie weekend period. When you show all your.
Here's the free movie weekend analogy.
You meet him and you say stuff to him like, oh, I'm a great listener. I'm there for my friend. You know, like you start talking all about yourself, and you're showing him like Schindler's
List. What's going on with the chin pouch?
You know, whatever. I don't watch movies anymore because
it's depressing. It's depressing to me.
But you know, you're watching, you're showing each other your big movies, and then all of a sudden, somewhere along the line, it becomes like Weekend at Bernie's 2. Like somewhere along the line, it like becomes a Police Academy movies without Steve Guttenberg. It's a shame.
Steve Guttenberg, call home.
You can tell about how I think that all the guys, you know, all the management stuff, they try to have you not talk as much. And I think this very defined to talk maybe more than
right.
Jump right at this one
again. It's the only way you're gonna get something natural is to like just defy being a, you know, candy cane on stage. I love this song too. There's so much I can do with it. If I want to take a long solo in the middle, I can take a long solo. It's almost like the set is written to give me these brief little vacations from song structure. And certainly this isn't a jam tune, but you know, I can take it out as much as I want. And it's also really like emotionally kind of takes me someplace other than where I'm standing, and it kind of puts me in this cloudy New York. I mean, this song is written all about a feeling, you know. It's all about like one afternoon, and maybe it's the afternoon you look back on when it's all over. But that moment where I think you actually stop thinking about it and it just becomes cool, when you stop going, this is fun, isn't it? And those moments last about 20 seconds for me. So this song may very well be about 20 seconds in someone's life. That was perfect.
Yeah, because the song's set in New York, and now that you're living back in New York.
I'm living in New York now. So it's fun, kind of a cool way for me to go home for a second. I still haven't fallen in love in New York, but I'm looking forward to it. There's Michael Chavez over there playing the guitar and playing the keyboards.
Multifaceted gentleman.
Well, when you think multi and he plays guitar and keyboards, you think two. And two facets is still one pain. It's one, but it's still
it's not
one.
Poly, it's more.
But it's still one pain.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's still one plane. It's just both sides of that plane. You start getting into a prism if you have three. If you were to pick up like a... Well, he sings, too.
Yeah, so he's tri-talented.
He's tri-talented. So now we're talking... Now we're working in three dimensions.
180 degrees.
Yeah, now we're working in three dimensions. Yeah. Popping out at you. I stepped my pedal wrong. I did not want to play this solo with that effect on, so I got turned off. So I had to wait, because I didn't hit the pedal right. I'm not a big pedal guy. I didn't hit the pedal right, and nothing I would have wanted to do more than play this solo right. There I am. I talked the notes out. Here's the guitar faces that, if I could plan them out, they would look nothing like that. But I kind of had to, like, stay in the theme of the song, so I couldn't click away. I kind of had to stay in it for half the solo, and it disappoints me, but I think I kind of hopefully got away with it. We've been drinking 2 a.m. I swear that I'm just proud that I didn't make a record that's, you know, trying to hit people over the head with what they should think about me. That's, you know, people probably have to go a long time to figure that stuff out. And I'm just glad I haven't figured a ton of stuff out, but I'm glad that I figured that out. That let them come to you and be patient and make a record that's, you know. Oh, look at that. Look at that.
Unedited.
That was a little bit of spit line in there. That was like a trip to the dentist by John Mayer.
This is how it is. This is us.
David looks like the kind of guy you wouldn't want to have over your house, but he's the sweetest guy in the world. So anybody watching, he thinks that, like, you know, just because he hasn't had his hair cut in a while and... Just because he, you know, doesn't drive with a license.
Takes people's crutches away.
He was just such a sweetheart.
I know, and if your parents, you know, if you're like, I have a crush on this guy, and your parents don't like his appearance, just say, he really has an extreme longing for Bubblicious Bubblegum.
God loves,
cases
God, I think,
cases of it.
You may see, David literally, this is not a lie, is up to 10 cases of Bubblicious Watermelon a day. 10 packs a day.
Very true.
So much. Tom Tyler, guitar tech extraordinaire. Now, if you ever came to a show on a tour before the summer tour of 2002, you saw me break guitar strings 4 times a night, and to know that it's hardly ever an issue anymore is just a blessing. So thank you, Tom Tyler.
He's very good at what he does.
Thank you, Tom Tyler.
I love you too, and I mean that in a very,
I'm like, ooh, I'm talking.
Right.
I don't know if you could talk over talking and make it a pleasant experience on a DVD.
Song you might not know because it's kind of newer.
How many electric guitars do you carry on tour?
The P Break song.
3. See, acknowledging that people leave during new songs, I just,
You ever have that thought that bums you out? You have a thought that bums you out, and you're bummed out by the thought, but the thought escapes you. So all you're left with is being bummed out, but you can't remember what it is that bummed you out in the first place. So you spend time going back in your mind, trying to figure out why you're not looking forward to Tuesday, whatever Tuesday is. You're like, what's wrong with Tuesday? Hasn't even happened yet, and I'm already freaked out about it. Well, there's a song kind of about going back in your head and making a list and checking it twice and making... That was a holiday. That was a holiday. I'm timing. Let's hear it from me. So anyway,
it's always a great feeling to go back and watch yourself. Forget what you said, and be able to have on tape you call on tape yourself out, and be able to be like, dodge that bullet.
Right.
You know. But as I was saying before, I started talking. I think it's just so daunting to me to do any collection of songs. That's why I'm scared of people reviewing this record, this DVD or even live record, because to me, if I could release a single at a time, that's easy. But putting a whole bunch of songs together in a row, to me, like, some of them hit and some of them don't. And this one is just, if you don't mind me saying so, Joe Public and Jennifer Public, I think this just came out really, really cool.
And to be honest, this is actually, I think, my favorite song that you've done. Because I remember when you were finishing it up, it was about a year ago.
Yeah, it was. We were in between tours in November, and I'd come home, and everything just escaped me. Because I used to come home and kind of, I could surmise what had happened when I was gone. I could kind of put it together in my mind, and I think the time change and, you know, the sun going down at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, and I realized that I hadn't maintained any other relationship in my life other than the people on the road that I was with. And when you come home, you don't call those people. It's kind of unspoken. It's, I love you, but I'm going to see you in a week.
Right.
And this song really came out of a place of necessity, and that's the best songs, when they come out of necessity. I'll tell you, when I go into a room and I sit down and I say, I want to write another John Mayer song, I don't get anything. But when I write a song, because I go, I got to write a song. And I remember I was onto something, and I had this kind of, it came up so fast, and I didn't let myself leave the house until I finished it.
It was like a day and a half.
It was like a day and a half, yeah.
You called me and I came over and you played it.
I couldn't let myself leave without finishing it, because I have a really nasty habit of writing a quarter of a song and then stopping. Which actually, incidentally, is what turns into a lot of the intros on this DVD and these shows. It's almost kind of like I'm purging these little pieces, kind of flushing them out so that they're not in my head anymore, because they just take up hard drive space. You know? This is like, there's some Police ripoffs in this song that I think by the time it gets recorded will be. Can you say detensified?
Sure.
Can you say detensified? Is that detensified?
Maybe out-tensified, out being the opposite of in.
Well, it's going to be brought down somewhat. You never know when it starts. There's fog inside the glass around your summer heart. Summer fast. Missing. I knew in the middle of this tour, this was those picks up on the microphone stand. I was given those in San Francisco by the Jim Dunlop Company, and it was the first time I saw my name and autograph. My picture and autograph on a pick, and I thought, two thoughts at once came down the pipeline. Oh my God, I've totally made it. And the other one is, oh my God, I'm now the cheesiest person that I know. But they make great little souvenirs for them.
You actually never even touched those picks on the mic stand.
Sometimes I do. I grab them sometimes, but I throw them out, and you think people would catch them, but all it really does is it actually disperses the crowd, because I look on the floor for it. So I've stopped throwing them out.
Right.
Just when I learned how to actually get distance on them. And I think Chavez has the coolest solo on this song, too. It's such a complete statement. Again, this is one of those parts. It's one of those songs where I can give myself the opportunity to kind of just play with space, you know. these guitar things I try to do, try to simulate a delay pedal. I usually mess up my pitch because I'm concentrating on getting the rhythm right in my guitar. I'm really bad at splitting sometimes. But the weird thing is, like, whenever I travel, and thank God I don't get sick as much as I used to, because I kind of take care of myself better, but I just remember the nights that I couldn't sing really well, my guitar playing would be so much better, and it's almost like my voice and my guitar playing look out for one another. And it's been incredible how, when my voice doesn't work so well sometimes, my guitar playing kind of protects it and takes over it. I'm a soundtrack
guitar. Really cool part of the song.
Well, I'm still waiting one day for, by the way, I just pantomimed smashing the microphone. I'm still waiting for people, for the record to come out, the next record with a song on it, and then we can all have a big sing-along and say check together. That's, I keep trying to tell myself, I don't sing every note on, you know, it's like, but you have to just look at the law of averages in singing. You're gonna get a note. You're gonna get a note off. Martin Sexton doesn't sing notes wrong. Bonnie Raitt doesn't sing notes wrong. I don't even think Elton John sings. I've seen Elton John sing, and he doesn't sing notes wrong. Me, I just, you know, I'm very much a. I can be killed by conventional weapons. I just always say to myself, like, in terms of my emotional damage control, for the number of notes you gotta sing, you gotta get a couple off. And I think you heard some there.
You probably know this already, but you've got a weird, wild way of pulling music out of people. You know that, don't you?
Coolest joys of playing music and having the crowd that I have and having the career that I have is being able to play a Stevie Ray Vaughan song that I'm sure that 99% of the people in the crowd don't know. To have them cheer for it, even if they're confused into thinking that it's my song, which I wish they weren't, but that's why we mention what it is. It's amazing to have people cheer for a song that you know would might not have ever reached them. By an artist who might not have ever reached them, so.
It's a big shout-out.
Big shout-out.
So, the extra that appeared with the first pressing of Rupert Squares had you playing this,
ironically enough,
in Birmingham.
I did it in Birmingham. That's what I was saying before when I wasn't talking over myself. that Birmingham is just one of the best places to play in the world. Now having circled the globe, so I'm really glad that we did this DVD here.
Very confusing streets, but just great people.
Scotty, by the way, Scotty drove 85% of all the mileage on any tour we've ever done involving a driver that wasn't professional.
And of that 85%, I'm sure 65% happened with U-turns in Birmingham.
This is a song called Man on the Side that was one of the very first songs that I ever wrote. And I think that you can tell. I mean, it's very, very basic in terms of structure.
You wrote this while you were in Berkeley?
I wrote this in Berkeley. This was maybe the third song that I wrote. And I don't like the song. It's just that it never kind of found a home. So I almost played this. Again, it wasn't on the set list. I think I threw it in to make my manager confused. Again, had to. This is my show on my terms. But I wanted to give it a home. Oh, there's more on the whole show. I wanted to give it a home and a place to live. And to me, when you record a song and you put it out in any capacity, you give it a life. And so it never really had a life. Now maybe if you get a shot again of behind me, which by the way, where'd the camera guy go? You'll see that there's some stickers on the back of my guitar. And one of those is the only sticker I've never peeled off something I bought, which is the Fender 50th anniversary sticker, which doesn't have any pomp or circumstance attached to it. I just always looked at it and went, no, this is the one sticker I'm never going to tear off or anything, because I'm a sticker tear offer. And the one to the right of that, if you see it, a good shirt tucking job there, John. That's great. Also, you've probably noticed now numerous times I have no ass. But there's a little sticker next to the gold one. It's me and a former guitar player in my band, Matt Mangano, who is just a hilarious guy, great guy, who I miss every day not being on the road with him.
Absolutely.
But that was a picture we took of ourselves years and years ago in one of those sticker booths that I put on my guitar and he put on his bass. Again, two stickers that I look at every day and think, how fun would that be to peel off? If you wanted me, if you wanted me, I'm the man on the side. I also used to play lotto numbers in the. I bought the guitar in 96, and I actually bought that guitar on Thursday, October 3rd, 1996, which was Stevie Ray Vaughan's birthday, that I later came to find out was Stevie Ray Vaughan's birthday, so I don't know if that means anything to you, that makes you lose a minute of sleep tonight. I think it's kind of cool, though, to be playing a guitar that I bought with money that I... Oh, that's right. I was saying that I...
You were saying something.
I was saying something.
Really finished.
I'm sorry. I had to jog my own mind. I'm sorry about that. I've confused everybody. I used to play lotto numbers. I used to work at a gas station. I would play this... All I was going to say was that I used to play the serial number of my guitar as lotto numbers. Didn't win a dime. Guess that cancels out the... Stevie Ray Vaughan's birthday thing.
I remember cleaning out the van and finding just tons of old notes and cards.
And
winning lottery tickets.
I still play scratch off lotto every now and again. I don't have the addiction that I used to have, but I'll still play a fiver every once in a while. In transit, after a show that's in a state we'll be leaving.
Right across the border.
And I buy them at 2 o'clock in the morning.
The last truck stop before the border.
So I buy them before leaving. Check this out. I buy them after we play. So it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and the machines are down. So you can buy the tickets, so you just can't redeem them. So I always say to myself, I'll just collect these things until I come back through. Never do. It is a complete waste of money. So I have a little problem with the instant win.
Your mind. I am the one who will survive. Alright, we're about to see some more rebellious action. By you?
Yeah, I just wanted to pay more money in publishing to someone else. By the way, wearing an outfit on a show that becomes a DVD...
Where I just start playing and I have no idea...
Effectively cancels out your ability to wear that outfit anywhere else because it then becomes the DVD outfit. So I'm kind of retired that shirt that I wore every day for a summer. By the way, it should be noted that the crowd is warm because of Guster. Guster opened up those dates for us.
All summer long.
It was a summer camp like a blast. Didn't expect the clapping. Just cast away. I wonder if this will get me tickets to the big police reunion. That's what I'm looking at now. I'm thinking this definitely gets my foot in the door because they just announced that the police are going to do one show at least. So I think now hopefully I've kind of grandfathered myself into that. Not playing it. Because God knows I'd love to, but just being there to watch it.
This is actually the encore that you played, at the very first show that I was ever at.
Scotty is the only person who's ever come up, one of the few people who've ever come up after a show, and obviously in the role of someone who paid money to come see a show and enjoys what I do, but still managed to put across the vibe, the kids say, in the village, the vibe of someone who just wanted to be involved on the other side and respect the kind of like what the other side was all about. And I haven't really met many other people. There's a couple of people, but Scotty's one of the few.
I am amazing.
I was always sad that I can't sing this song in the regular pitch. I have a really narrow range of being able to sing, and I write my songs within that range, so you can't really tell that I can't sing a certain note. Or I can't sing higher than a certain note, but I always just wish I could be, oh, your ass passes, I wrote my note. And I really want to blow people away with that third verse, but I just can't. So. And maybe not having the highest voice in the world actually saved me from being in a cover band and having no other choice but to write my own music, because I had to give my own voice notes to sing that didn't show the world that I couldn't sing higher than pretty much a E. That's an E for all you people out there. I hope that someone gets my, I hope that someone gets my message in the bottle.
Message in the bottle. This part of the set pretty much changed every show, the whole tour.
Yeah, it was fun for a while. I don't do it anymore. It kind of breaks up the continuity, but this was almost that tour that kind of brought everyone together. It brought the people who saw me as an acoustic act and saw me as part of a duo with David Labrie playing bass, or part of a band that had three people and then four people. And I kind of feel like we're all caught up now, and that I can not play acoustic one night if I want to. I usually always do, but I always felt a responsibility up until recently to represent every single facet of what I did on stage that that people might have seen had they jumped on at a different point. And I played with this kind of format since I started playing Eddie's Attic back in 1998. Play and then do a little part in the middle with nothing. See just how much a guy singing someone else's song can get the kids going right there. Some of the people who are faced the other way. Birmingham, good clappers. And I definitely am thinking to myself at this point, did I pick the wrong song? And then I said no, and I'm going to get rhythmic. Painful to watch sometimes. Now I know why people don't do DVD commentaries of their own live shows. It's hard to... I gotta get strapped in to watch it. Here we go, throwing in more people's songs to have to pay them.
This is Bjork tune.
I gave Columbia Records some paperwork on this evening, because I don't even usually sing this song. Every once in a while I would sing, I don't even know how to pronounce the song. It's spelled J-O-G-A. And that's what it would be called from now on. That sounds like a Jay-Z song now. But it just, actually it took a long time to clear it. We were almost going to have to cut it out, because we were waiting for Bjork to get back to us, Bjork's people. To get back to us on whether we could use it or not. I gave the Suits and Ties some work. Is that a Tom Jones, like, bead of sweat under my chin? Oh, that was so cool.
But I've heard you throw this in comfortable. But maybe not a message in a bottle before. I don't know.
No, I've thrown it into Kid A before, I think. I don't remember. Christ, Scotty, you're the guy with the set lists. Watch this. Watch how quickly I get ready to play another song.
Where's the daylight?
Oh no, no problem.
Where's the daylight?
Oh, okay. Sit down and listen to me. It's story time.
Story time.
Okay, it's John Mayer's story time number 6 for the evening. I think we've played 7 songs, and I've gone on 6 extended rock on touring trips. That's right, sound it out.
Make sure it's all there.
That's right, sound it out.
There's David, out of the shadows.
I was thinking about relationships as it pertains to songs about relationships. And I was trying to think of, well, it occurred to me.
Preach on.
The key, I figured out the key to a relationship and how to make it work. Check it out. This is a tip from your Uncle John. Check it out. When you first meet somebody, you find out they like you, first of all. Friend of a friend of theirs says he or she really, really likes you, and it kills you, floors you, sends you to the ground. You got to pick yourself up off the ground. Then you get their phone number, and you call them up, right? And you say, yeah, that's a great phone conversation. Can I see you sometime? And then they say this. They say, I'd like that. I'd like that makes you fall on the floor again. Your heart's about to stop because of I'd like that. Nothing feels better than I'd like that. So now, your blood pressure's going, you're 6 feet off the ground, you can't sleep.
David Ryan Harris reference right there.
So then you hang
good man, good friend David Ryan Harris with the song 6 feet off the ground. That was totally David Ryan Harris reference.
You know what? I've been thinking about you a lot. And she goes, and you go, what happened? And she goes, I'm sorry, I've been thinking about you too. Bam, higher into the sky. But now, I'd like that, done. Now you're up to, I'm thinking about you. Then, however number of months pass, it makes you feel comfortable saying it, you say, I gotta tell you something. They go, what? You go, I'm in love with you. And nothing in the world sounds better than, I'm in love with you. And then maybe she starts crying, or maybe he goes, and all of a sudden you're like, I'm in. But now, what doesn't work? I like that, and I've been thinking about you. Now we're at I'm in love with you. Then maybe someday move up to I love you. Fast forward, now you're like, I love you a lot. I love you more than anything in life. Now I love you doesn't work. There's a threshold. It keeps moving up. Fast forward like 6 months, 6 weeks, whatever the case may be. Now you're on like, I want to marry you. I want to impregnate you with my love. I want to just send my love to you. Damn it, words don't work anymore. And then you say this line, and you know you've used this line before. I just wish they'd put a new word in the dictionary bigger than love, because love just doesn't describe what I feel. And so then, now, he or she starts...
Someone wrote a sign.
Love me, and you start...
Signs are hard to read when you're playing. Right. They screw your lyrics. I can't read signs anymore.
They're in section 45.
Someone wrote Do Me on a sign a couple nights ago. That was easy to read.
Okay. Dome.
Dome, I said.
And you go, oh my God, she hates me. And now it's like, I hate you more than anything. And it's like, we're over. And then they go, no, we're not. And you go, yes, we are. Now the words completely do not work at all. You're left with nothing. You're throwing punches underwater. You're done. You know what the moral of that story is? If there is one.
No, there's
ever,
not.
Ever, ever, ever underestimate the power of, I'd like that.
I don't know if that story had a point. I don't know if that story had a point. It made sense to me.
I think it was just more fun to tell.
There are nights when I just get on these streaks of talking as fast as I could talk, even if I was reading something, and I just want to ride it.
David's bass playing is really fun to watch in this song.
See, people always tell me that David watches me. There's the hee-haw dance in full effect, ladies and gentlemen.
You're saying people always say that David
Oh, David always watches me play. And I guess it's not really being reinforced here, but I think because I told him to stop. You know, the hee-haw dance, as Ken Healy so permanently stated it, kind of came about when I got a smaller guitar. I used to play really big Martins, and then I thought it would be cool because Paul Simon played a really small little Martin, and James Taylor has a small little guitar. That, I don't know, it'd be cool to have a smaller guitar. And for someone who, you know, watching his back, I'm huge. I'm a giant man, hulking shoulders and arms, just a bit. It's ridiculous.
A solid, massive rock.
And what's the one thing I decided to go do is get a guitar that looks like a belt buckle. So now, I don't know, I think it was the lack of coverage around my body that I just ended up having to have something to do with my leg. I don't know why, but I remember the first time I ever did it was on The Tonight Show. And everyone kind of posted...
Right, during Wonderland.
Yeah, on the message board. Of course, if you read it on the message board, it didn't happen. But the hee-haw dance kind of came in effect when I got a smaller guitar. I love guitars, but I don't really have a relationship with them that allows me to really get deep down and dirty with, like, all the specs of them. Like, I can play a guitar that's really messed up for a long time until someone comes up and says, hey, you want me to fix that guitar? It's really, really messed up. And I go, I look at it and I realize that the strings are like 4 feet off the neck, and I go, you know what? That's why it's been impossible to hear.
Right. Or the Martin with the razor blade.
The razor blade press?
Bridge, yeah.
There is none, by the way. We like the people with Martin. It's the Strangers with Candy version. It's the limited edition Halloween series.
Halloween Past? Or is it coming up?
Halloween Past. Scott and I were talking about this a couple nights ago. Halloween and Easter are the two. They're kind of on par in terms of their importance. Well, not. I mean, certainly Easter is a religious holiday. Halloween is a superstitious one. I will leave the semantics of those two things up to you, the listener and viewer. But they're both kind of. They both exist on opposite sides of like the annual spectrum. And you always wonder, like, whenever you see Halloween candy or Easter candy, like, did we just pass? Are we getting ready for Halloween, or did we just
kind of set up a perimeter, like an aura, just around that date.
Okay, right there is where I say hello, all you fucking lip readers. Right there. Did you see that?
I saw it.
That's why I said hello, all you fucking lip readers. And I just want to let it be known here, that is absolutely lifted from a George Carlin...
That's right.
A George Carlin routine. And I explained that in the Added Value documentary, and they took it out. Because someone was looking out for me, but I, you know, every time I've ever tried to pull off someone else's joke as my own, I've always gotten called on it.
I'm gonna tie my other shoe... I'm going to tie my other shoe now because I don't know why. If you're taping out there at home, I'd like you to enumerate that as its own track. Actually, tying shoe left and shoe right, I'd like you to make those separate tracks if you're making a...
I'm sure somebody did, by the way, too. It's just such a scary thing to know that every night you go on stage, you might be making someone's tape that gets on the internet and becomes the definitive version of a live song. So it's a great way not to let yourself half-ass. Here's another intro that started out on this tour. And again, going back to purging old song ideas, this Fold Me Up, Take Me Out on Portable thing happened on a... demo that I was working on, and still kind of am, and just wanted to take it out of the equation. Just wanted to take it out of the running because I was having too much of a problem wondering if I should go with that idea. So now I'd be copying something if I did, so I won't. Take me out. I'm portable. Yeah, someone started calling the Porta John song. That's fine with me. I just really like to hear myself sing something different. And I've stopped changing the vocal melody so much to my songs because you know, certain people do it really, really well. Like Bonnie Raitt will throw one line different and it'll just kick your ass. And I was like, you know, you'd be amazed to find out how little I listen to Room for Squares, or I'm not around it. I'm really not around it. I'm around the songs from it, but we play night after night after night, and you just start singing things different. You can't. You go back to listening to the record, you go, I can't believe I sang it that way. So rather than change every line in the song, I kind of feel like it's cooler to make up a new little intro to give yourself the sensation of doing something new.
And this lyrically changed every night, too.
Yeah, I gave some shout-outs to you. Yeah. We just sing and play whatever we feel. And the feather falling out of bed at night is real. That's true.
It happened. It happened to several people this
Every
time.
Night I go to bed, I worry it's tonight the night I'm going to get thrown out of bed. It's kind of like being married.
I remember Chris...
Oh, a jaded joke by people who aren't jaded. Let's hear it. By the way, that was a hand noise.
I was going to say, our production manager, Chris, who works hard to make everything happen, actually was thrown out of his bunk one night on one of those long drives out west.
Thank God it doesn't happen to me. My 22-inch Apple CinemaScan display took a tumble one day.
That's right.
And that's where the lyric, we just tied to the floor, or tied, bolted to the floor, tied to the wall. Because I had to do that.
That's the most word I've ever heard you be about.
That's right.
Type of equipment.
That's right. No, Scotty knows that I'm a careless individual, but we were in Berkeley, and the bus, it was early in the morning, the bus was taking some of the crew guys to set up the show. We went up this really, really steep incline that's at the Berkeley, Greek Theater. And I have my Apple 22-inch, not the high definition, the 22-inch CinemaScan display, and my G4 Quicksilver desktop tower. And the monitor fell over as the bus went up, and I woke up and just let out a tirade of swears. Swear after swear. There was no space in between the swears. And there's a little bit of a mark on it, but I'm going to be all right.
And now it is bolted down.
So now it actually is bungee. It's bungeed down. The computer's bungeed down, and the monitor is velcroed and taped down. So we're all right. But that after that day, man, I got just a whole roll of gaff tape and taped everything I owned to the wall because I couldn't stand it. I don't remember. Do I swear here for the kids? Do I swear? And leave this shit behind. That's right. I don't care about any DVD. I don't care about the being able to play it in a wet seal. But sometimes when you want to get everybody's attention, you know, and I feel like I have a pretty grand command of the English language, but every once in a while, the F word, I'm trying to stay away from it on the commentary, but the F word is just, it really says, hey, I'm funny.
And that's why people use it all across the
right,
world.
Right. But it's just so interesting to me to play a show night after night after night where these songs just roll over on top of themselves every single night and you don't remember how you came up with these things. This was my way of turning the microphone so I could kind of look at everybody, because the shows got so big so fast that I just felt like my line of sight wasn't really reaching out as far as I wanted to, so I just started spinning the
microphone. You're being unfair for a little while.
Yeah, and so it was really kind of gives the crowd evidence that I have no ass. But now we tour and we have microphones on this tour on the sides of the stages, and it's a lot easier to kind of walk to the edge of the stage and turn. I just want to turn what people think are okay seats into really good seats with just the flip of a microphone. Entertainment staff guy, event staff guy, not singing along.
But kudos to all the people who were there, because they were on pitch for the most part.
I don't know if it's the law of averages when you get a whole bunch of people in a room, or if it's just that my fans are great, great singers. But man, they sing notes better than I do.
I just said kudos. I don't say that.
No, but there's nothing wrong with calling. I call myself out all the time. Because if you don't, people just, it's like a cliffhanger. People are waiting for you to do it. Only Wapner can judge me. That's the new one that came out of this one. That's the new signature line. Only Wapner can judge me.
Everybody's just a stranger. That's the danger. Growing up.
You see Stephen Chopek there. Stephen actually owns, I think, 5 shirts that he wears on stage. They're his show shirts.
But he only wears 2 of those that he owns.
Right, right. He has an entire outfit that, you know, he'll wear something else all day and then get suited up. Michael showcasing one of his 3 talents.
Right, one of the 3 sides. The song gets, it certainly is a universal song, which I was surprised to find out. I really thought that I was making a song that was going to be kind of a novelty for people in Georgia.
Yeah. Thank you so very much. Say hello to Michael Chavez playing a keyboard and a guitar this evening.
The closer you get to Atlanta, or at least the South, I mean, the South kind of is its own little region, and the song just sounds better down there. In fact, whenever I sing I'm driving down 85 and I'm in New Zealand, I think to myself, you wouldn't understand.
I really think
to myself, you wouldn't understand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it works, John.
This is a song about girly parts.
This is a really, really, really fun song to do. Not so much musically because it's a guitar part. It really is like, it's just a couple things, but to participate with the crowd on this song is just so much fun. And it's like, I have a good time flirting on this song. Because, I mean, the secret to my singing this song night after night and still kind of maintaining this feeling of sensuality, when I hate saying the word sensuality, but like, you know, because so many ugly people use that word. but
everyone have nothing to do with that.
but is to just kind of imagine that I'm singing, not into a microphone, but into like the nape of someone's neck. And by the way, I don't really know where the nape is, but I don't. Is the nape of the neck like the very back of the neck where the spine starts, or is it where it turns
like
into
right
the,
here,
it
right
turns
here.
Into the
kind of the, arc
turns
of
into
the
like the shoulder bone? Yeah.
So.
But I really imagine that I'm singing into, you know, that's the one song that I imagine. I sing to a giant group of people by way of one person in my mind, which can change every night depending on who's in the front row.
And to me, like, I think that when I first heard this song long ago, I felt like you were, like, you almost break some rules by singing about, like, lyrically singing about what you sing about.
There
you
know? Is some, there, well, it's, I've never been chastised for it before, and it's funny because I'm waiting for it, especially now that the song is kind of a single, it gets played on the radio. I mean, it gets played in the morning, you know, the fact that you play this stuff in the morning, you know?
Right.
It's like I go on morning radio and play these songs.
Right, right.
Play Your Body is a Wonderland. Tell me where I'm going, though I might leave to find it. I'll never let your head hit the bed without my hand behind it. You want to make it so that I didn't see the blankets. Take all your big plans and break them. This is bound to be wild. Your body is a wonderland. Your body is a wonderland. I still think
look
that guys,
look
hey,
at that.
Hey, hey, you know, we're, no, it's not.
I know you're my own.
David on probably his fourth or fifth piece of gum for the evening. Right there are all his gum wrappers. This is water. Water and gum.
What's that?
That's a lens glare or something. I don't know what that is.
I think it's a puppet.
What are you talking about? I don't know how to walk on stage if I'm not walking in rhythm. So I walk the mic in rhythm. God, I wore those pants every day for the longest time. I just get attached to it's the way I go. I get attached to a shirt. I want to wear that shirt all the time. I get attached to a record. I want to hear that record all the time. Right, there's JoJo, see? There's JoJo the camera guy.
There he is.
Whoever's doing the crane had to make sure JoJo got in there. Because there's JoJo getting up. I'm sorry, Scotty.
Every tour definitely has its brand suitcase of clothing. And it's not so hard to wear the same thing every day when you've got other stuff to wear.
Right.
But in Europe, it was very challenging.
Oh, Scotty and I went to Europe, and we had two pairs of underwear. And
just a small 22-inch bag.
Yeah, 22-inch carry-on. Mm-hmm. And I told myself that I would wash my clothes with Woolite every night, but the Woolite bottle exploded in my suitcase. So I actually, not only did I go not washing underwear for the last 2 weeks of the tour, but I lost one of the pair. So I ended up with one pair of underwear. And now you're thinking that's the most disgusting thing in the world. But I actually went out and bought more. I had to buy more underwear.
And I just got tired of my forearms being sore every morning when I woke up from
drying. Ringing with a W is should be an Olympic sport. You don't know until you've rung. I love singing this song because I feel like of all the songs I've ever written, this is the one thematically that people can really, really dig into and go, absolutely. Because it's just such a man thing to Scotty's pointing out the heat out there. It's just such a man thing to not admit that you're sorry, that you offended somebody, but inside to just shrivel up and die. More people have come up and told me this is the story of their lives than any other song. Not even that song, the story of my life.
Too bad for them.
Yeah.
Didn't you mention one time that some of the song can get a little hip-hoppy? Did W play
it? Well, to me, this song is indicative of a lot of the songs on Room for Squares. And that's the groove thing that I was into, and it was almost Room for Square. A lot of the songs in Room for Squares were almost inspired rhythmically by Charlie Hunter and a lot of those really cool Charlie Hunter grooves. And
who actually opened the show
up? Who opened this show up, full circle. And so it was my idea to be really, really melodic in a pop sense while being over this kind of. You know. And it's cool. I just you're not gonna really get objectivity out of me on this commentary, having played these songs for 2 years. You're not gonna get any objectivity out of it. Michael Chavez, by the way, did a great job of ducking the camera that almost hit him in the head a couple times. Not to slight in any way the camera operators, but
I think that everybody in our whole camp was ready to play some tackle football versus the camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they,
yeah. It was, yeah. It was, or at least some kind of intramural sport. Look how I literally, my mom says I'm S-shaped. I am absolutely S-shaped there. My posture is horrible. My mom would always tell me, stand up straight, you're S-shaped. And she's, Mom, you're absolutely right. Did you see what my body just did? I want to telestrator right now, Madden style, so I can show you just how much the curvature of my spine, I'm just too tall for my own good. I gotta sleep fetal position in the bunk.
Yes, my head is hurting. Welcome to my world. It's a population around. But we can't come. So take it or leave it. That's just who I am. But you know that
look here now. That's my Jimi Hendrix. That's my Jimi Hendrix thing.
You pull it off very well.
Thank you. Look here, baby. That is an absolute Jimi Hendrix ripoff. And in terms of ripping people off, I bring a lot of lyrical quotes in from other artists, but I kind of feel like that's almost like the way that jazz musicians instrumentally quote other songs. You know, like if you get, you know, Jimmy Smith live in Tokyo in December of, I don't remember the year it was, you know, you're going to hear Kenny Burrell playing guitar and, you know, by the way, it's a great record too. It's called The Master. Great Jimmy Smith record. But you're going to hear Kenny Burrell go, you know, it's like jazz artists quote other jazz artists. And so I kind of thought it'd be cool to look at lyrics in the songs as being notes and kind of quoting other people's notes, except it's really, really expensive. Thank you.
Yeah. Now we're talking with jazz. I'm a neat freak.
So this is Covered in Rain, which certainly have a lot to talk about on this song in terms of how it came up, because it's so unique. Actually, this started out, these two chords started out as more of like a kind of like a David Gray Please Forgive Me beat kind of jam that we would do, that I would beatbox to before I downloaded that Good Sense program off the internet. But Scotty would come up and, you know, Scotty would come up and play triangle.
Song called Beat Me Up.
It was a song called Beat Me Up, Scotty. Get it? And it started out as really kind of goofy, and then I remember I used to sing Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. Just getting, staying on the police tip. Again, gotta get them tickets. Remember I used to kind of sing, you know, do I have to tell the story of a thousand many days since we first met? And then after September 11th, I kind of felt, with a song like City Love, I really kind of started a timeline of these, you know, not like Tommy and Gina Bon Jovi style of these two characters, but I kind of wanted to respond in the song. And so this is actually the bridge. The day she called up and came to me. I don't know if people realize that. That really is the two chords from the bridge. Called up and came to me. Covered in rain. I wonder if people get that, but they do now. And I remember we were playing in Dallas at the place called Trees. A really cool club in Dallas called Trees. And we were on stage sound checking, and I just started. I remember I had my camera out, and I just had to just press record, even with the camera facing the other way, just to get the lyrics down. It was only the first chorus, too.
Right, because you added everything else.
Everything else kind of got written later on.
Now are people watching all the people watching us right by now. Standing by the missing signs at the CVS by the checkout line. She puts her crying hands in mine.
When we were on tour writing, you know, on tour in the van when this song kind of came to be, that was a great time for me. I traveled with this case that Scotty and crew were just super cool about, always digging out of the trailer that had my recording equipment in it. And I would bring it up to my hotel room, and this is where I wrote a lot of the lyrics for the song. And the song really did grow night after night after night, kind of in the way that songs metamorphosize as time goes on. This song really started out with one verse, and it just grew into a chorus, and then it grew into verse, chorus, second verse, and then it grew into, you know, and this is kind of, this always reminds me when I play this solo, which is really, really fun to do, by the way. But this solo reminds me a lot of the solo, well, two solos, actually. First started in a Jimi Hendrix song called Bold as Love, off the record Axe as Bold as Love, when he digs into that kind of... And then Stevie Ray Vaughan did it in a song called Life by the Drop, which, when he did it live on a couple of those recordings, were just like... It was this release that just... And I remember every time I soundchecked the song, I tried to get... I just wanted the amps to be louder on this part. I've always wanted the amp to be as loud as possible and hurt, like, just kind of not hurt people's ears, but just take them by surprise for a minute. And so I actually, that amp behind me, the tallest one, is really only on during that solo, because I just really wanted to make people take notice.
It's just such an explosion of a solo.
Like, I want it to be most of the time, yeah. And you know what? It's a responsibility, too. If I don't feel like playing one night, which, you know, if I feel like I'm having one of those nights, I simply don't put this song in the set list, because I never, ever want to accuse myself, knowing that people probably never accuse me themselves, of phoning it in. And now, watching this back, too, I wish that I would have taken more of a breath on these notes, because the notes just keep going and going and going. And I think it's a nervousness thing, too. Like, it's so passionate that it's almost like talking, and someone going, okay, shut up.
Yeah, speaking more about the kind of evolution of the song with your... I remember there used to just be that one verse outro of City, and now it's just become its own.
It's its own song, and as evidenced by being able to play it. And I thought that I had never played it separately in a set, but I guess I did a couple times. Okay, now we got another quote of a quote coming up here really soon. This is this right here. Okay, this right here is from a Frank Morgan tune called Helen's Song. It's a great tune. Song, you know.
The song is very much of a story, but musically, almost more than lyrically.
The night before, this is actually September 12th. Payoff shot right there. No.
It's September 12th.
This is September 12th, and the we didn't play September 11th. And September 10th, I played this song, and it just wiped me out completely, because I wish that was actually on tape. It was, although I'm glad it's not, because it lives in a whole different plane emotionally, but. There was, the night before I did this one, the last time I played before this week, I just started playing, inexplicably started playing occasional songs, like holiday songs, and going through a year chronologically with, like, Happy Birthday and Here Comes the Bride and, you know, Christmas songs and you know, Auld Lang Syne. And it really, it took me an hour to kind of talk after that, so I'm just trying to prove to the world I'm a deep person. No. But I just remember that this was kind of still thinking about it and still in that same place.
Yeah, I think for everybody who was on the road at the time, it very much marks everything that was going on, you know, with everybody.
I'm just really glad that we did this DVD and we did it. we've really settled into a groove. And, you know, being calling it Any Given Thursday was perfect for me because it's just, it really is not meant to be. It's a time capsule for one day, not 2 years. You know, if you want to see a different show, it's a different night. You know, come on a different night. But there's nothing about this that's.
It's almost like the kid who came to school and it was picture day and he didn't know.
I was, as you were beginning that, I was thinking to myself, I wonder what this is going to be. And you said the kid who came to school and I was ready to cringe, but. Definitely putting out a DVD that is the whole show. I mean, it's the whole show. It's wrong notes and right notes, man. Just, you should see my face going along as I'm watching this. Like, come on. It's like I'm watching American Idol, and I'm like, I'm rooting for Johnny, the young sissy boy from Connecticut. And by the way, see the light behind me? That light behind me is just fine. But there was a light in front of me, and every single tour, and it would blind. I don't think it's up there. No, it's not up there this time because they had these row of lights that were there only for this one show. But every other night, there was this light that was positioned in front of me, this pod light that moved around, and it would blind completely the two people that were in its path in the front row. And you just watch them, like, want to still be grooving in the song, but, like, have their hands up in front of their face. And then it would always come and nail me in the eyes, but I always felt like that's what I signed up for. Right. One thing about me is that my eyes are completely now conditioned to flashes. You want to know pain at the very beginning. You take pictures of people in complete darkness. It is the worst thing in the world. And now, I don't even notice it anymore. Then again, I need Scotty to guide me wherever I walk.
Oh,
who's that? Who could that be? Hello.
Had a good time.
Hello.
It's a telephone, John.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
Are you in 602?
No, I'm in 802.
Especially
yeah. Oh no, you got to get an elevator 3.
I'll be right there.
Okay, come on up.
Bye.
Okay, bye. That's De La.
And John not working your telephone correctly.
Well, because the phone got unplugged, and so the actual speakerphone, the cordless phone wasn't working, but the speakerphone was. You should not have to plug a phone into a wall power jack. Phones should be self-powered. Anyway, David's going to come up.
Thank you guys so much for doing that, and I feel a great sense of pride coming home to play for you, so thank you guys.
You feel very open, like you just got out of the bathtub.
Not very open. My pores are open on this one.
A long summer. I'm glad we saved you the last.
The beginning is very cool.
Yeah, I always hope. That's. Well, see, now you got to understand how I have to choreograph these shows in my mind as we go. Now, the line of thinking is that I usually sing a little bit of King of Pain at the beginning of 83 because it's like a song from 83 that I'm just remind myself with when I listen to it. But now I've already sung a Police song. So now I've got to, like, do something different on this. I don't want to oversaturate any one thing, like talking about the Police constantly during your commentary so that you can get tickets to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction where they play three songs together for the first time in 15, 20 years. But so I kind of have to change it on the spot. And somehow I just decided that I was gonna go Razel.
Razel.
If your mother only knew, if your mother only knew. There's Dayla scratching.
There's David scratching.
David's scratching the bass of
DJ
the
Dayla in the back. And MC Chavez.
I really think this song for me is a success as a song goes because it really sounds like it feels. Like when a song sounds like it feels, you know, like, you know, what are the lyrics about? Well, it's about being a kid. It's about a song that sounds like it's a leftover from 1983. It just does it. It just, like, takes me there, you know? And people ask me what my favorite song is a lot of the time, and it's not the one that's got the coolest rhymes. It's not the one that's got the biggest hook. It's the one that, like, It's the songs that feel done. And oddly enough, now that I think about it, this was always a song for me that I never felt like I nailed the verses. But once they dry, and songs dry, and when they dry, you can't go back into them. As much as the songwriting teachers that I had at Berkeley tried to tell me that you can always change a song. Well, you know, they're done at a certain point. But writing this, I always wanted, there was such a specific, it's such a curse and a blessing at the same time when you have a specific idea you want to write for, because you try so hard to get it across. You know what it is. It's like someone telling you a string of numbers and you've got to remember them, and you walk through, you just happen to be walking through Number Town, you know? Here comes David, right during my Number Town reference. Good, because I had no idea what I was saying. Hey David, come on in, we're doing a commentary.
Excellent.
Plug on in. We're just talking about 83.
Yeah.
And throughout the night, we were talking about how, though you appear like the bad influence in the band, you're actually, you know, like if you were a mom watching the show, you might think that, like, who's that? By the way, David's chewing gum right now.
Yeah.
And it reeks of sour apple. But he really is a bad influence, only in that he'll rot your teeth, David will. But I was just talking about trying to get 83 right when I was writing it, and now forgetting totally that it was a struggle. This one took a while to write, man. And I like the fact that I worked my ass off on Room for Squares, because, you know, kind of like my life was like a sequel to a movie where the actors' names have changed. Oh, well, well, these days. You don't just come up with that stuff on the back of a bus. So it's nice to have written yourself a little love letter that says, Johnny, half-ass it and I'll kill you. At least, I mean, in terms of going to write a new record. This was always a song I didn't mind being too fast.
That's hidden spite to Steven.
No, but it's not a problem with it being a little bit faster.
And you know what, as being someone who walks around the crowd during most of the shows, I think I can say that 83 is one of the most quoted songs on homemade t-shirts. You know,
really?
The puff paint t-shirts, the glitter t-shirts. People like the lunchbox line. And
by the way, we keep America thriving with things like puff paint.
We do.
And
there's no shortage of that.
No, and glitter. Big shout out to Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I'll tell you why that is, Scotty and Dela. My dad, here I go to display. By the way, you can see it's all sweat now. My dad was very angry at my mom for confirming with someone that I was a native of Fairfield, Connecticut, when I'm actually a native, technically, of Bridgeport, Connecticut. So that was more from my dad, like, hey, I'm actually from Bridgeport, Connecticut. Because my dad was very, very, he was almost livid, near livid, that the paper had printed that I was a Fairfield, Connecticut native. I'm actually from Bridgeport, so big shout out to Bassett High School and Central and Harding High and Central High School. My dad was principal of Central High School for a long time, and I'd have to say that a big part of my musical upbringing was that my father would confiscate Walkmans or Walkmen. You know, it's proper now, so it's Walkmans.
Of course.
Walkmans. And he would have boxes of them in various states of repair and disrepair. And not only would we, my two brothers and I, get to choose after, you know, rock, paper, scissors, who goes first, just around and around and around taking Walkmans. And the tapes in them were amazing. Some of the tapes in there. I mean, that's the first time I heard
Stealing.
For Those About to Rock, We Salute You. That was inside a Walkman. Lean on Me by Club Nouveau in a Walkman. You know what I mean? Because that's the stuff. Because you can hear that tonight.
Because, of course, everybody you went to school with was cooler than you.
Right. Well, I didn't go to the schools that my father administrated. I don't know what that would have done to my brain. But
and if I could say something too, we kind of missed it. But the keyboard solo,
yeah.
I believe, the first time you ever played a keyboard solo in the song was in Birmingham at the Five Points Music Hall.
Was it really?
I believe so.
Oh yeah. That was it was November of 2001.
That's right. It all happens in Birmingham.
It does happen in Birmingham. But I wanted, like, to me, quoting all these songs is again, like, using someone else's melody to evoke, like, a memory that someone else has, to just try and solidify that whole 1983 vibe, you know.
It took me a long time to figure it out, actually. This probably shows how slow I am. when you used to do like four or five songs at the end of 83, they were all actually from 1983.
They're all from or like around. They were certainly like around. I don't know what walking up on the drum film does. It always makes me feel like I'm in Creed or something.
Try to break the head of your guitar.
And I was told by Ken Healy and again production manager Chris that every time the end of that song comes up, they worry about the guitar. But you should know that my coordination is so bad that 9 times out of 10, I miss it. I totally don't hit the cymbal.
Thank you so much for accepting me.
I think when you say thank you for accepting me, you completely take everything out of the equation. It's just like, it's so uncool that it has to be believed. It's a very self-conscious walk, by the way, when you know that not only a crowd of people are watching you, but that also the camera's behind you. Walking is a very difficult thing to do when you're thinking about it. Like when your friends used to pick you up and you would walk down the front, like walk out your drive, like down your driveway, they're all waiting in the car. You don't know what to do with your hands. This is the way I play comfortable, and it's really hard for me not to play comfortable every night because it is such a specific color in the painting of a set that I'll tell myself I won't play it, but I usually end up playing it because it's such a it is a favorite of people's, but it's such like a palate cleanser for me to just slow everything down. And I don't know if I'll ever write another song like Comfortable that's so involved like that. I mean, I can't look up at anybody because I have to watch my hands because I'm desperately afraid of missing a note.
Like, so that's, technically, it's like one of the hardest songs.
It's the hardest song I've ever written. It's the hardest one to play. I actually, trivia-wise, didn't play the song on Inside Wants Out. Clay Cook actually played guitar, and I had to learn it when I went solo. And I think he plays it much better than I do, and I'm very clumsy with it.
The girl behind me jumped on my shopping cart, then rolled down.
It's like Comfortable is like that one trick that the crazy bastard who does performance art can't do all the time. Like, could only do when he was younger, you know what I mean? It's really tough, but like from this viewpoint, watching it back, look, I had no idea that this song did this to people. Like, look, that's really cool, because I can't see out more than 6 rows, and the people in the first 6 rows are lonely by 8. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. But to watch them, like, to really to know that you're part of someone's date night. How could I ever not play this song every night until I write another one? Which will undoubtedly be a horrible Xerox copy. That's really, really cool. I gotta say, I'm
so broken. I sleep with this new girl. I'm still getting used to. My friends all approve. Say she's gonna be good for you.
This song can get kind of Rocky Horror Picture Show-esque, where people start to high-five during the high-five part.
Right.
Makes me wish that I wrote a line about throwing cash. By the way, Birmingham is just gorgeous, gorgeous people. I'm going to say people. I'm going to be equal opportunity, not for myself, because what I really want to say is ladies. But I'm trying to be a good boy and say people. I'll let the girls back me up on that if they want to.
And they're always so nice, you know. Everyone from Birmingham is always so nice.
Birmingham, Atlanta, all those places. It's just a very ego-free, no one's trying to top anybody. It's such a cool way to live.
She's perfect, so flawless, oh, so sad. Hey,
fun to look at now, because you don't really see the crowd that much in the set until now, which is cool. That guy was yawning. You'll never know. Now, David, you know what it's like when you see people yawning.
Yes,
you'll never know what it's like. It's a strange sensation to play for someone who you know is into it, and is still into it mid-yawn, but just the international symbol of suck is just happening to go on. I mean, we're at this point going into, like, you know, 11 o'clock, probably 12 o'clock at night, and people have a right to yawn, but still, when you see someone yawn, you just have to shield your ego with your hands.
So perfect.
You see all the semi-trucks lined up behind the crowd back there?
Just pumping exhausted.
So broken.
And in a moment, the Harlem Boys Choir will come out. It's a really cool moment of the show and something I'm really proud of. Wait a minute, what's that? Oh, they're not there. They took them out in editing. Apparently, it was a contractual thing.
No, I want you back.
Is that staff holding it down?
Keeping it contained?
I like how we're not admitting that we're out of stuff to talk about at the end of this thing. But this is, you know, playing comfortable at the end of the set, it makes it feel like the end of the set, because my emotional memory of hearing Comfortable is that the show's almost over, and it's a certain melancholy that only really works after everyone has been rocked to the point of bloodshed.
Hopefully everyone's already become bored of the commentary.
Yeah, I don't know. If you're still listening, you know what? Email me at imstilllistening@mac.com.
You can take us to every show.
Yeah. You know what? We're going to do that right now. I'm going to write it down so I don't forget. I'm going to start a website. And the first five people to email me at this website will have two tickets.
To any show they want,
anytime we play a show. And you know, if we don't play a show for another couple of years because I'm in rehab for something, you know, these terms are...
Or we get sued for making fun of people in the crowd.
We weren't making fun. Okay, I'm going to make an email address now that I'm sure is going to be available to me when I go to check.
Okay,
so make
an ideal...
JMDVDCOMM. How about that?
COMM?
Commentary.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Email me at jmdvdcom, C-O-M-M, jmdvdcom@hotmail.com. Okay? Now, first five people to email me get two tickets to any show they want to get. You get your own ass there. I'm not getting you there. But I'm going to do it. We're going to set it up. jmdvdcom@hotmail.com. Com with two M's. Go to it.
Yes.
We'd like to congratulate you for sticking around this long. You're a super fan, and you should be able to come to shows.
I hear you're playing your custom-made Novak.
This is a Novak's guitar that
we're going to start this off.
The very, very incredible Ralph Novak. No, again, trivia, his name is not Ralph Novak's. Built for me, and it's an incredible guitar, and one of probably a couple that will be made before I kind of get the one that I'll be playing for the rest of my life. But it's kind of designed because Neon is so kind of unorthodox in terms of its tuning, because the low E is down so low on a guitar that it's really hard to maintain the right pitch, because the guitar string isn't meant to be that loose. So Ralph built this guitar for me that, you know, there's no better expression of, like, I like what you do than I want to build a guitar for you, by the way. I
mean, expression.
Yeah, that's right. Novak's expression. I first played a Novak's expression. By the way, if you want to know more about that guitar and other great Novak's guitars, you can go to www.novaxguitars.com, NOVAX guitars.com. But, yeah, again, a Charlie Hunter reference. I found out about what Ralph was doing through Charlie's guitars. But, I dreamed about having custom guitars when I was a baby boy. Well, of 13 years, 14 years. And to be on stage playing one is really, really cool. And Neon is the ultimate song for us to all just get out whatever we want to get out. That's a quote from Mama Said, Family Values Tour, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Family Style, sorry, not Family Values, Family Style. Just because I don't talk about where what I rip off doesn't mean I don't know it. Doesn't mean that I wouldn't tell you if I had the chance. Again, two intros to a song that probably needs one or none. But it's just getting the let out because we don't get to play for another day. And by the way, I have a new relationship with Crazy Glue from playing Neon and pretty much every song on the set, but Neon especially. I put Crazy Glue on my fingernails now because when I do that, look at that. Women, you want to date that guy? There's the S-shape, the return of the S-shape. There it is. It's unbelievable to me how I can get my body to do that. My pelvis actually goes forward and my shoulders go back and my head goes forward. Some pop-up video style stuff. Chofek is sitting on a seat that is wired up. This is not a joke. Wired up to some kind of transducer that makes his seat vibrate whenever he hits the kick drum.
Right. It gives it more kick, right?
It gives it more kick so you can feel the kick. What else can I tell you about? Oh, there's a fan on stage. How'd that get up there? They'll get security. That was a fist up in the air. I don't know why. What else is it about? I always had ideas that we could have cartoons running on stage without anyone knowing, but you might as well just get therapy instead. Learn how to stand on stage instead of relying on cartoons. So you gotta understand, like, for me to stand on stage for 2 hours, I could never stand anywhere for 2 hours straight. And every night that I get to this song, I really literally say to myself, holy crap, I've made it 2 hours standing in the same spot without getting too antsy to the point where I had to leave. And as much water as I drink, I've never, ever had to pee on stage. I've never had to excuse myself. I mean, when I get on stage, another piece of trivia, I'm an empty man. I'm stepping on stage with 185 pounds of, I'm like an empty postage bin. Tear weight. You know? But it's amazing to me that I've never had any huge... I've never sneezed on stage before in a song. I saw Michael Stipe sneeze on stage at an R.E.M. concert one time and said it was the first time that he'd ever done that. Felt honored, you know. That part was kind of ripped off from a song called Common Ground that Charlie Hyde plays, I think. I forgot who wrote it.
Is David Solo?
David, is this any specific song?
Mercy, Mercy, Mercy.
By who?
You're going to ask me that.
He's like this. Mercy, mercy, mercy. Well, Ed McMahon, who wrote the song?
Piano player. I can't tell you right now.
Well, this day last gum.
At some point, at a random.
Okay, what's this from? What's this from? What's this from? Dum ba dum ba dum.
Oh, that. My bedroom.
Gotcha. Who wrote that?
Who's that from?
Oh, I think it's where I take the keyboard solo.
It's kind of cool because every guy gets featured on, you know, doing the thing at the end of the show.
Yeah, and I always worry that it's self-indulgent. It's a self, you know, let me say it right here. It's a self-indulgent tune. Big Pilot says it's what? 10 to 12. 8 minutes to 12. research the big pilot now. I'm gonna come up with this around the world. Check my shit out right there. Hold on a minute. Yeah, hold on a minute. I got lucky that night. You might think I knew how to play the keyboard.
It's kind of like Mr. Rogers-ish, you know?
It's pleasant.
Wow.
Now, every other night that I've ever played that, I messed something up, but that was kind of complete and might give someone the wrong impression that I actually know how to play the keyboard. It took me all summer.
We rectified that, didn't we?
It took me all summer to learn how to play the solo to 83, which I actually played on the record with the help of, like, many, many starts and stops, as we professionally call punch-ins. And then that solo in Neon, it took me all summer to figure that out. So don't think that I'm any superstar on the keyboard.
I always love Michael's part. Just a very spacey...
I always like the fact that it confuses people.
Yeah,
I'm sure that it's confusing people, and they're not quite sure if they should keep bopping their head, but those who do, you know...
Drums.
I think Steven does some of the most tasteful drum solos in the world. And I'm not a drum solo fan, but his drum soloing is so lyrical. And I'm just a fan of things that are lyrical. And it doesn't even have to be relegated to words. Just if the music is lyrical, I'm hooked. And Chubb's one of those guys.
And Chubb makes drum faces, too. You talk about guitar faces earlier.
Yeah. He snarls.
Faces. He does.
Chubb has a snarl.
And he wails some, too. See, that's a little bit of a wail.
Do you think that if you were next to him, you'd hear him? David, can you hear him wail when he plays?
No, but his midriff stays surprisingly still. If you watch him, look at his... Like,
he can have a glass of water to sit.
Right.
It's kind of sing, 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 you know?
What do you mean?
I don't know.
You mean the panda? But it just has a tune, you know? I'm always waiting for him to go on that riff that says, he has this one, that says, go back to the mic. Here he goes. Here it comes. That was also, I actually think about that one performance right there too, because whenever we come back, and I think that was one of the best times we ever kind of all summed up the song together. By the way, I didn't make I will have said by the way about 1,000 times when this commentary.
I mean, so, I should mention.
You rock my face off. Those things that are going in our ears, those are what we call muffins in the industry. They're in-ears. So whenever you want to really show a sound guy, maybe your local sound man was on the street, but you know what you're talking about. You say, oh, I know John Mayer because he's got in-ear muffins.
That's crazy.
I get all my sports scores. Real time. And right now, going through my mind, it's like, oh my God, I can't wait to put a dry shirt on. And it's almost done. Okay, well, you know, you can be Creed if you want.
Thank you so much for coming out once again.
That seems to have been it. I think that's a pretty good representation of a pretty good representation of a show. It's got high points, it's got low points. It's got points that make me cringe, it's got points that make me go, ooh, damn. And I don't think you see a show that's any more balanced than that. And there's me doing my best Paul Stanley. So on behalf of myself, the very laid-back David Labriere and Scotty Crowe, thank you very much for joining us in what will probably be, and surely the last time anybody, first and last time anybody decides to talk over their live concert. If you've listened this far, you're a super fan. Thank you very much, and we will see you out on the road or on record or at the local supermarket.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, you guys.
Good night.